Are you tired of the same old discussion on the issues? The repeat performances? Then your GPS has directed you to the right place. And now, the world according to us with Arnell and Maloney.
So, Arnell, you had a big feat ahead of you this week. You were supposed to fast before Yom Kippur, right?
According to Jewish tradition, halacha, the Jewish law, the Talmud, yes, Jews are supposed to fast for the Day of Atonement. You know, when God writes in the book and decides the whole week from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, reviews your behavior, Kathleen, mm-hmm. from the previous 12 months.
Oh, boy.
And then decides what kind of a year ahead this is going to be for Gary Arnell.
Okay, well, you a good... I hope that you at least abstained from food the way you were supposed to.
First of all, if I was at your house, that would have been a very easy chore.
Yes.
Because there's not much there to begin with.
Lettuce.
So, lettuce. Yeah, but you can't, as a Jew, you can't even have lettuce.
No.
You can't consume any. No. You're not even supposed to drink water.
Really?
Okay? Ooh. Yes. Yes, it's a dry fast. Unless you take medication. You know, we have like exceptions, like with the abortion laws. Jews have exceptions to fasting.
To fasting.
Okay? If you need medication, you need to take a pill. You do it. You take it. You know, you say Baruch HaChucha, and then God forgives you. You know, and all that stuff. So did I fast? Okay, here's what happened. In years gone by, I've always questioned this whole business about, you know, I'm proud to be a Jew, my culture, my tradition, and all of that. But I've been questioning a lot about the authenticity of you know, all of this, the religion, the scribes, the whole business. So in recent years, I've not fasted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, I did because of the duress and stress of my parents, you know, as I was growing up and so forth. Here's what I did this year, because I was conflicted about this whole thing. My family fasts, and so here's what I did. On Tuesday night, when we had dinner prior to, you know, you're supposed to stop dinner at around 7, or in that area. So what I did was, after dinner, this is where I violated it. I still noshed a little bit. Shouldn't have done it.
No.
That broke the fast right there.
Right.
The next day.
You were done before you started.
I was done. So I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to redeem myself?
There's no redemption
from this?
After you've broken the fast. You've broken the fast. You cannot take that back.
Well, first of all, I'm thinking my family did not know that I did that because it was late. I had no business doing
it. Is that what it's about? What your family knows? Isn't it between you and the higher power at this point?
Yeah, but I'm a little conflicted about that entire relationship right now. So anyway, I noshed a little bit the night before. Yesterday, the day of Yom Kippur, all the way through like 7:30 at night, I was great. Here's what I did. I did not consume any food. I did, though, Kathleen, take a few sips of water, which is not really adhering to the principles of fasting. And I didn't tell my family that I had some water, but I told them that I fasted for the day. And they said to me that they were very proud of me. And then I did fess up that I had a couple of bites the night before. Because, you know, God's writing in the book, Kathleen, I can't take any chances.
Right. Did they withdraw their pride in you?
No, because they know how bad I've been over the past couple of years. And so they were very, very proud of me that I did hold out on food yesterday until about 7:30 at night.
You know, I also question those kind of rituals where, like the Catholics for years had, you cannot eat meat on Friday. That was ridiculous. And then they ended up dropping it. Which was a good thing, but after all those years of people suffering through it, and to make somebody fast for a day, I don't see the point. What is the point?
So I was talking to my brother about this whole business about tradition, and we were talking about agnosticism, atheism, do you believe in God? And both of us came to the same conclusion. I think we could say that we're agnostics. You know, we're not sure, but we're leaning towards something is there. But in times of need and when prayer is necessary, both of us agree that we go, oh, God, help us with this, because it's like a security. kind of thing. You know, you want to say something. But I'm with you about this. And you went to Catholic school.
Oh, yeah.
Would it be proper for me to use the word indoctrinated
for you? It's somewhat what they try to do, pushing these. It's supposed to be a belief, but it does feel like they're trying to drum it into you.
Right.
Maybe the religious approach is all wrong. There are some people who are very, very devout Catholics, and they buy into all of this stuff. Immaculate Conception, all of that.
Yeah, the blood of Christ, they buy into all. And then, of course, topic for another show, all of that, Kat, leads to religious fanaticism, you know, around the world and terrorism.
Oh,
and,
you
know, we see what's going on in Iran and so forth. But that's what I've been doing lately. I've been questioning the authenticity of everything that we were. I went to Hebrew school. I was bar mitzvahed. But I've been questioning. And you know, there's a little piece of me, Kathleen, that feels guilty about the questioning part. I just feel like that's not the way I was brought up. I was brought up to believe there is God. You adhere to the Jewish traditions, Jewish law.
Well,
but me now to even question it, you know what I have, Kath? I have Jewish guilt.
Yeah, but
Jewish
then
guilt
that
about
is,
questioning.
Then that is indoctrination, where they're trying to,
that's true,
you know, force it on you. They're not trying to present it in a way that you can make up your own mind about it, which in the end, everybody does. Everybody should, I think. Everybody should.
So let me ask you this. God supposedly closed the chapter on the year ahead that Jews and Gary Arnell will have in the year ahead. I one time asked a rabbi, what happens if you go out and murder three people after he closed the book and say, so you're going to have a great year ahead? So the rabbi tells me, Gary, the book can be opened again.
Oh.
I mean, come on.
Okay.
You know, this is the book can be opened again. What is this, like Reader's Digest? You know, go from one chapter to the next chapter. You know, so do you think because I noshed the night before and I had some water on the Day of Atonement that maybe there may be some negative things in what he wrote about Gary Arnell for the year ahead?
I wouldn't worry if that's all he's got on you. Like I said, these religious rituals, what do they matter? For some people, fasting is like, what if you're diabetic and you need to have a certain amount of sugar in your system? Those people can't fast. Fasting, I think, is not healthy for you.
Well, I use that as an excuse for a couple of years because I'm a type 2. And I really could have gotten away without taking the medication in the morning because it's pretty much under control. But in the years gone by, when I was really concerned about the hypocrisy, I would use that as an excuse. Come on, I would tell my family, I'm a type 2.
Yeah.
I need to have something to eat. And you're right. You know, and I need to have something to nosh on so that I could take my metformin. And it leads to so many negative things in the world, Kathleen, when the fanatics take control of religious beliefs and so forth. By the way, what do you believe about this Alec Baldwin case?
Wow, it's
bizarre.
You know, one of the things about the news business that I always marvel at, that, you know, truth really is stranger than fiction. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
You can't.
So here it comes, this settlement that he made with the family of the woman who was killed on
Hutchins.
The set.
Right. Elena Hutchins,
Part of the settlement is that her husband is now an executive producer.
That's right.
Of the movie Rust. What? The movie should never be made after what happened. If my loved one had been killed on the set of a movie, well, I would want that movie shut down and never, never see the light of day.
Boy, I'm conflicted about that, Kathleen, about whether the movie should still be made.
No, it should not.
Right, like if my sister or brother was shot on the set, do I still want that movie to be made? Good
question. If for no other reason, out of respect and to honor the person who died needlessly. And then another thing, it's been how long, a year that they've been investigating this to determine whether or not there will be criminal charges against the man who actually was holding the gun when the woman was killed, a.k.a. Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
What's taking so long? To me, it's pretty clear cut.
And you know, the interesting thing, Kath, is that they've settled up this civil lawsuit you know, that the family brought against the producers and against Alec Baldwin and so forth. But no animosity, no hard feelings. You're right. The guy is her husband or whatever, still going to be the executive producer.
He's going to be executive producer of the movie where his wife was killed?
Yes.
That's like out there. That's out there.
And, you know, you brought up the criminal aspect of this. People are under the belief that because they resolved the civil part of this case, the criminal part of this case, here's the latest on that. Check that out a half hour ago. Santa Fe District Attorney said in a statement that the civil settlement agreement would not impact the ongoing criminal investigation in the case. You know, the person who's supposed to check the gun and all of those things, I think they're called an armorer. And the lawsuit claimed that the movie production people cut corners and chose to hire the cheapest crew available, and that he had a dual role, this armorer, check the weapons, and also, get this now, Kath, assistant props master on the set. So, the investigation is, and you're right, I mean, it's ongoing a year later. It would seem like everything was cut and dry.
It seems very cut and dried, because I've read the comments of many gun owners and people who are familiar with firearms, and it is just basic gun safety that when you're holding a firearm, you assume it's loaded and you never point it at anyone. That is basic gun safety.
And but in a movie, they're going to point it, and that's why they have this armorer on the set that is supposed to check the chamber to make sure, Kathleen Maloney, that there's no live round in there. Something went amiss here.
Yeah, we know what went amiss, but for some reason, this is not resulting in a criminal charge. I'm not saying that there is intent, but certainly negligence.
What I find really interesting about this, the family files the civil lawsuit against the Rust Production Company, against Alec Baldwin. I'm not sure if there was any monetary involvement in all of this, but I find it interesting that her husband, Elena Hutchins' husband, was very quick to point out no animosity, no hard feelings. Yeah. It was an accident. But still, there was this civil lawsuit, and still it remains to be seen whether or not there's going to be criminal charges. But, you know, I find it super interesting, Kath, because at first I didn't agree with you about should they still do this movie if a loved one was killed on the set.
Absolutely not.
My instantaneous reaction was, why not? It's a creative endeavor. It's a movie. But if it was my brother, my mother, my father who is killed on that set, would I want to go see that movie? No, I wouldn't personally. So you think they should just kill the whole project?
I think it should be killed just the way the poor cinematographer was killed. And I think that it should be boycotted. I hope it's the biggest flop ever. I think nobody should go see that movie. I cannot even fathom that her husband is going to participate in the making of this movie now.
Isn't
executive producer.
You know what else is falling apart? Gisele Bündchen and Tom Brady.
Oh, my goodness. The GOAT.
I mean, the GOAT falling apart. And first of all, Kathleen, they're attributing it to the fact that he decided he was going to retire from the NFL. She was worried about his safety, the kids. He has one child also from a previous marriage,
right.
but Gisele was very concerned with his safety. And then he announces that he's coming back. See, I don't think that alone was the reason why they fell apart. Do you
think
was reason enough? That's what the media is reporting.
It's probably, from everything I've read, an accumulation of things, probably all revolving around the fact that for Tom Brady, his career was always first, always.
Yeah.
So now I think she saw an opportunity for maybe family to be put first in retirement, and then he went and backed out of that. I guess he's so obsessed with the career and the fame and the ego of it all that he can't give it up for his family.
He was quoted as saying at one point that the two most important things in his life are NFL football and family. But no, I'm not well, sure
I
how
think,
to
I think he determined
fix that chronologically,
which has the priority. I've never been a Brady fan, quite honestly, never. I always felt that there was an element of cheating in a lot of what he did when he was with the Patriots, Deflategate and all
Deflategate.
Of that.
Deflategate, yeah, right.
I never trusted the guy. I always felt that he looked so smug and there was no humility about him, that he thought he was better than everybody else. He threw his family away. That's what it amounts to.
Here's the part of this story that I find so interesting, Kathleen. The New York Post, all right, page 6 on this story. Giselle Bundchen was spotted without her wedding ring on the same day Page 6 exclusively revealed that both she and her husband Tom had hired divorce lawyers. You got to hear this. Photos show that the Brazilian supermodel, out with her kids, but without her wedding ring on Tuesday, this past Tuesday in Miami, where she's been staying amid rumors that she's splitting with the player, with Tom Brady. It's the second time, this is from Page 6, that the former Victoria's Secret angel has been spotted without her ring this week. The second time. On Monday, she was photographed leaving a South Beach gym after getting a workout in and didn't have a ring on for that occasion. While it is unclear, this is all Page 6, while it is unclear if ditching her ring is related to the couple's marital woes, Bundchen was wearing her wedding band as recently as June when the family vacationed in Portofino, Italy. So here's what I don't quite understand, Kath. They're a high celebrity profile couple, all right? Mm-hmm. National Enquirer, Globe, Examiner, OK. You know, all those tabloids that are out to check out in the Super Bowl. Why are people so interested in other people's lives? Is it an escape from the state of culture that we're in America today on the political landscape? Why do people care? I don't care.
Why? That people care. I think they're sort of like voyeurs into the lives of the rich and famous. And well, even though those people have all this money, their lives aren't perfect either. And maybe in a way it's like, well, okay, money doesn't buy happiness kind of thing. I don't think people really care. Do you care? I don't care about those two. I mean, it is sad, as it always is sad, for the children of divorce, right, no matter how much money you have.
People do care, because otherwise you wouldn't see their pictures on the front of the National Enquirer, the Globe, the Examiner.
No, but what I'm saying is
care, and I think it's insanity.
People don't care in that they feel for them. Like I said, it's more like a gossipy thing. Oh, did you see what's happening to Tom and Giselle?
I just don't get it. You know, for me, it's a comment on the level of intelligence. I know this is really taking it to the extreme. Like, there's so much to worry about. People have to worry about their own families. They have to worry about the government. They have to worry about taxes and everything else, health that becomes a problem in our lives. I'm just fascinated by the amount of attention that these stories are played on. Last night, I was watching World News Tonight with David Muir. And I think we like him.
Yeah.
I think we're in agreement on his second best
him.
To Shep, right? Shep is number one for us. And by the way, there's another cable network out there now, News Nation, and they are hosting, I don't even know if I should say his name right now.
If you're going to say the C word, no, that's not allowed on this podcast.
The C word is not allowed. That could be interpreted in many different capacities.
And we're Arnell not, and we,
the C word we, on the podcast.
We are not talking about Chris or Andrew on this podcast.
Okay, so I'm glad you cleared
Move
it up.
Move on, Arnell.
Let's move on. Anyway, news. It's a good
news. No.
Okay, I'm moving on. I'm done. I just, when I was watching David Muir last night, and he's teasing this Giselle Bundchen Brady story, you know how they do lots of teases on that program,
right.
And he goes, the breakup coming up after the break, and I said to somebody who was watching it with me, because I know what they do there, they'll come back and Muir will come on for about 9 seconds and say, Giselle Bundchen and Tom Brady have gotten divorce lawyers. She has been seen without her ring for the past couple of days. Allegedly, it has to do with him unretiring from the NFL. Boom, and then they go to a commercial for some medication.
Yeah,
That's
well, you
what
know,
they do.
I think honestly that does not belong on a national news program. I don't think that belongs in the realm of news. It belongs in celebrity gossip.
Page six.
Well, page six is page six. That's not.
Page six is page six. That's where this.
That's where it belongs.
That's where it belongs. But I'm still, look, I'm not comfortable with the fascination here about their marriage and about it breaking up and so forth. So
you think you know what's happening? We'll tell you what's really happening. The World According to Us with Arnella Maloney continues in a moment.
You're troubled, Kathleen, about this whole business about the tent cities in New York City with the immigrants.
Yes.
What's going on with that? I mean, come on.
It's laughable. So they started erecting these tent cities at Orchard Beach in the Bronx,
which everybody
knows that that place floods very easily. That's like known. They actually had them built, the tents. And then we got this big storm. And of course, there's flooding all over the place. Now they're moving them to Randall's Island, which is, you know, it's equally in danger of flooding, this little island off Manhattan.
Right. That's East River, right?
Yeah.
Randall's?
It's surrounded by water. It's ludicrous. Just ludicrous. The tent cities.
Well, you know, at first, I got to just tell you this, with Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott in Texas and Doug Ducey of Arizona sending these people to the sanctuary cities, you know, Washington, Chicago, New York. And did you just tell me a couple of minutes ago that there were more showing up?
Some arrived not far from Kamala Harris's residence in Washington. Actually, if they want to make a point, they should send all of them to Washington, D.C. so that congressmen, the president, the vice president, they all see what's happening at the southern border, where these people are coming over in waves and the communities have no way of absorbing them and no resources to handle what's going on. So,
you know,
Washington is ignoring this. There's no doubt that Washington, the Biden administration, is just ignoring this. It is a major, major problem on very many levels. And Washington is ignoring it. So instead of sending them to New York or Chicago or Martha's Vineyard, they ought to be sending every single busload to Washington, D.C. And the tent city, that should be put up on the White House lawn or the Rose Garden.
I absolutely believe you are correct. Listen to this. The critics, listen to this, have called the flights and bus trips a case of cruel political theatrics aimed at calling attention to GOP opposition to what Republicans call Biden's border crisis. The Republicans, and they're right here, say that border states like theirs shoulder an inordinate share of the burden of caring for, and you're
right,
Kath, look at state budgets.
You know, here we go again, trying to make everything political. This should not be a political issue. This is actually a humanitarian issue for the people in the United States, as well as the people who are coming here. What is going to happen to them? We don't have the resources to accommodate them in this chaotic manner.
Here's a number for you. Custom and Border Patrol migrant encounters hit 2 million during the first 11 months of this year. It is a record. It includes some, though, that were turned back under Title 42. Remember when, during the height of the pandemic, Trump put that into place, and it lasted for a while under Biden as well. Here's the key, Kath, when we talk about immigration reform in America, like what's really happening. I was stunned when I saw this. The most recent major immigration reform enacted in the United States, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, guess when, Kath? 1986.
Yeah, I mean, it's
made it illegal
ridiculous.
To hire or recruit illegal immigrants.
This is an issue that Congress needs to deal with, and they won't. They won't. They make it a political football. And so it is Washington. They are the ones abusing both the migrants and the American people by making this a political football. They just don't want to address it. And yet it is impacting communities tremendously.
Yeah, and you know, at first I was absolutely disgusted by loading them up on these buses and these planes and so forth, but I do see the point. I do see the point of states having to absorb the total care of these immigrants, some of them illegal. By the way, Kath, if you're applying for refugee status, asylum status, you're not considered illegal until the judge finally makes a decision on that. But it's just astounding that we have not had legislation, real legislation, meaningful legislation since 1986 on immigration reform. And it goes through Republican and Democratic administrations.
And actually,
it goes through Congress.
The point of busing these people to these places is to bring attention to the fact that they're ignoring it. And it's an attempt to enable them not to ignore it and to do something about it. That's what it's all about. It's a desperation move on the part of those little towns on the border who can't handle the situation, and the federal government is just ignoring it. It's wrong.
I mean, it's amazing. I've done a full 180 on this, where I was just so dismayed by their mistreatment of these individuals and sending them, which is still, you know, you've got to think about, are people cattle being used in a political fight? But the message of it is absolutely correct. Why do we have to bear the brunt of the responsibility when you are being irresponsible in bringing about immigration reform that is meaningful in this country?
I mean, the border is essentially open, and people are coming from all over. And there is a drug trade, and there is human smuggling going on. There's all kinds of terrible stuff going on, and the administration is turning a blind eye. That's where it's inhumane.
And the drug situation, over 100,000 opiate-related deaths.
And what about this fentanyl? This fentanyl, they just recently, just this week, they seized a bunch of this rainbow fentanyl, the fentanyl that looks like candy. Yeah, unfortunately, everyone will have access to fentanyl.
You know what a lot of people do not have access to? Nurses.
Oh, yeah.
In hospitals.
Now they're going to have robot nurses. Robots.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I mean, you were in the hospital recently. How would you like to have been taken care of by a robot nurse?
You know what I was thinking about when I started reading about this big nursing shortage in America? They say they're going to need 1.2 million new nurses by 2030. We're nowhere near that amount, Kath, because of an aging population, which requires more nursing, an aging workforce, burnout from the pandemic, salaries, and there's so much. So how did would I have felt if a robot came into my room? First of all, you know, I was in for my cardiac catheterization.
Right.
Now, I'm just thinking, suppose they sent a robot in to shave my
groin. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly a sort of a non-medical function that a robot could perform.
You know, by the way, a bunch of researchers at the University of Texas, I think, put this whole thing together. But there's some research going on in Japan right now where the robots would actually lift elderly people out of bed and could draw blood.
What? A robot can draw blood?
Yeah.
As it is, they're using robots to transport medication. I mean, come
on.
That's what they're doing. There are all kinds of things that could go wrong with that. What if they bring the wrong medication to the wrong place, to the wrong people?
What about if the nurse that came in, the robot that came in, what do they call it? They also call it Moxie. What about if Moxie came in to shave my groin and then had an electrical malfunction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
could have destroyed my manhood for the rest of my life.
Maybe she slipped, you know? Her little robotic arm slipped a little bit.
I would think that there was another bris taking place on me. I mean, like,
you would hear, "I am sorry that I did that. I did not mean it."
And then you'd hear a code. You'd hear a code. What would the code be?
Code red.
Code red groin area.
It's not like a Roomba, you know. Even the those Roombas.
That's right.
Even those Roombas don't do a very good job.
You know, we have one of those.
Yeah.
We barely use it. It sits and it's plugged in. Because I know if it bumps into something, it'll, you know, like a leg or something on furniture, it'll move. I don't know why. But everybody in the house, we got to have it. We got to have it. And we have a cat, so there's a whole bunch of, like, dust and litter and all of that crap yeah. laying around. And we barely use this thing. Well, you know what? I use the little broom and dustpan.
I think if there's a big open space with nothing in it, that's fine. But
that's okay.
If you have furniture and pets and someone leaves something somewhere it doesn't belong, yeah, I'm not a fan of those Roombas.
You know what else you were not a fan of? The dress that Jill Biden wore in Puerto Rico.
Okay, well, so
let's talk. What is it? What happened?
I mean, I will be the first to admit that I am not a fashionista in any way, shape, or form. But when
that one. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry about that. I should. You know what? That was a cheap shot. Okay?
That was
because the two pair of jeans that you own,
right?
You regularly wash them. And I alternate them, yes. You alternate them, and so you have my humble apology, making a denigrating comment to you about your apparel choices
right.
and the amount of inventory that you have in your closet.
Me, jeans, t-shirts, and an occasional camouflage skirt.
Camouflage skirt,
right?
Which I've seen you wear. And you wear boots, like army boots, military-style boots.
Boots or sneakers? Or sandals in the summer.
Sandals in the summer, but those boots are so sexually attractive, I have to tell you.
So anyway, I'm watching Jill get off the plane,
right.
And she's in this dress that looked like a rainforest. I mean, she looked like she was in the middle of a rainforest, this blue dress with all this green vines coming off of it. And bright orange flowers. And I believe I got a glimpse of her shoes. I think her shoes were orange. She looked like she was going to a garden party or a Halloween ball instead of to survey hurricane damage.
The only thing she was missing was paper towels to throw into the crowd. This was from Hurricane Fiona. And, you know, they're still looking to recover from Maria in 2017.
But she
shows
up
with what the hell, that choice of dress? I saw it quickly, Kath.
I mean, maybe she
was like, what?
Maybe she was trying to capture the island feel, but
I guess
she wasn't there for a party or an event. She should have worn something really low-key.
Something a little more conservative.
Yeah.
She should have went into your closet and got a pair of jeans. I mean, that would have been more appropriate.
Much more.
You know. And then they go to Fort Myers.
Well, then maybe someone said something to her because she wore a very conservative, like a beige pantsuit, which, she didn't stand out the way she did in Puerto Rico.
Right. Clean cut lines.
Right.
It was a step up from the Hillary pantsuit, though.
Yeah,
it was. Those things looked like they were off the rack at Marshall's.
Yeah.
This they really did. But this one looked like
it was very nice.
With the white
blouse. And
yes, I loved it.
Very nicely put together, yes.
I think she's fairly attractive.
Well,
I think someone
must have said something to her about, hey, not when you're going to hurricane ravaged areas.
You shouldn't be doing this.
You do not want to miss this. The Odd and the Offbeat is straight ahead with Arnell and Maloney.
There you go. Dollar store bell, big investment in the podcast. So my Odd and Offbeat, Kathleen, I didn't even check with you. We do a lot of prep for the show. Do you have one? Or if you don't, I mean, we'll go
with yours today.
All right, we'll go with mine on this. By the way, when I just asked Kathleen if she had any Odd and Offbeat segment and prep for the show, next week on this program, early in the week, we're going to be discussing on the podcast what each of us contributes to the podcast itself and whether or not there is a work-life balance in the amount of work each of us puts into, listen to the diplomacy here.
Yes.
Into the diplomacy, because I know you have a couple of things to say. I have a few.
Don't give it away too much, Arnell.
I'm not giving it away. It's a David Muir tease. Next week, dissension at the podcast.
Okay.
And then we'll go to the commercials. So. Anyway, my Odd and Offbeat, Kath, do you watch any of those home shopping things like QVC, the Jewelry Network, Shopping Network?
In passing, I've seen them, but I'm not generally drawn to those things.
I am never drawn to those things. If we are channel surfing, and they're there. Here's the thing. In my family, my daughters, and in particular, Raina, they are into whatever they're selling. So if you go to QVC and they're selling a blouse, They build it up like there's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
This blouse has fiber in it that came from a Brazilian rainforest. It was recycled. It didn't damage the economy, but it is durable. It is flexible. It looks phenomenal. And wait till you hear this price. Suggest retail for this blouse, $129. Tonight, now, in the next 20 minutes, we're selling it for $29 with four easy payments of like $5. And then they'll show you how many they sold. You know, they'll say, sold 256. We have 500 in stock. If it's a cooking utensil, anything that they show on these home shopping things, Kath, they're the best.
Well, they're pushing them. The thing is with me, they're pushing them. If you have to push a product that hard, I have no interest in it. Or when you go to, you hear some of these infomercials, and if you act within the next 10 minutes, you'll get two for the price of one.
Right. Well, there may be, but then they do this. They go like, there's an additional handling charge.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Oh, yes. You have to pay extra shipping and handling.
Right. Or any of these commercials that have to have a legal disclaimer at the end of them. So don't forget, buy your car today. You'll get a car.
Yeah,
that's end of the spot.
Right.
Because they fulfilled their legal.
Right.
But these things, it just amazing. You know, they should have like an Emmy Award in a television category. I think they should do this for acting during a home shopping network, QVC, jewelry network, whatever it is a made of them out there.
Well, now they're the video version or the modern day version of the snake oil salesman, right?
That's true. Yeah. I'm not saying every single product that they put up there is garbage. Some of them are quality products. Some of them are good buys. But for the most part, their number one goal and objective is to mesmerize you.
Right.
To tell you that if you don't buy this now, you will not see it anywhere else.
Get you to whip out the credit card.
You got to get the credit card out. And again, Kathleen, four easy payments.
Yeah.
of $5 each. And then they have the models. You know, and, you know, wearing the blouse or the shoes or the, it just amazes me. And, and look, these things are successful or they wouldn't be buying as much time to put these shows on the air. But
I don't know what possesses people to buy things like that. You're seeing something on TV. You can't really feel it. You don't know.
No.
You know, you can't try it on. I mean, I wonder how easy it is to return this stuff. Probably not,
you know, that
right?
Sounds like a dating site. You can't really feel it. You can't really try it on. I mean, you're hearing all the positive attributes. You got a picture from 15 years ago, and then you meet the person.
That's this edition of The World According to Us with Arnella Maloney. Don't forget podcast updates throughout the week. And thanks for listening.